We only have a 130 docket. We have two cases on that docket. The first is, and I may say this wrong, Codillo, is that close? Codillo Apodaca versus Allstate Insurance. Is that close? Counselor here and set up and prepared, I see. And the other is the people of the state of Colorado versus Robert Landon. There's counsel here on that, both counsel here on that case. Fine, thank you. Let me make a very, very brief record. First of all, the arguments are timed. They're set for 15 minutes per side. There's an electronic timing system and a light system that keeps track of that. There's a module on the lectern that will tell you how much time you have left. The green light will be on for the first 10 minutes, the yellow light for the next 5 minutes, and the red light when the argument is over. If the appellant wants to reserve time for rebuttal, please advise me and I'll do my best to give you a high sign or wave at you or jump up and down to let you know when you've reached that time. But the module on the lectern will also let you keep track of it. Having said that your time is limited, you may use it any way you wish, but I would let you know that we have read the briefs. One of us has been into the record to some extent. We believe we understand the legal issues and the facts behind the case, at least at this stage. You may use your time any way you wish, but we would suggest you go directly to the legal issues unless you just feel absolutely compelled to talk about the facts. The lectern is adjustable by toggle switches on your right. If you find it uncomfortably high or low, please feel free to adjust it. There's also a microphone. We now digitally record the oral arguments. They are posted on the internet within a day or two after the argument, available to the public and available to you to use as you see fit. We sometimes review them in the preparation of the opinion. So we would appreciate it if you would stay at or near the lectern so as to produce a clear recording of the argument. We would ask everyone in the room to make sure that any electronic devices they have, such as cell phones, Blackberries, iPhones, you know the list, are turned off or put on silent. If you absolutely need to respond to it, if it summons you, please leave the courtroom before doing so, so as not to disturb either the counsel or the court in the course of the argument. Are there any questions? If not, we're ready to proceed.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Megan Waples on behalf of plaintiff's appellants, and with me today is Colleen Parsley of the Gold Law Firm. The first issue in this appeal is whether Allstate violated Colorado law when it issued an umbrella policy containing automobile liability coverage without an offer of uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage as described in Colorado Revised Statute Section 10.4609, the Uninsured Motorist Act. Now, the statute applies to any automobile liability or motor vehicle liability policy insuring against loss resulting from liability arising out of an accident, issued with respect to any motor vehicle licensed for use in this state. Now, the phrase automobile liability policy is plain and unambiguously includes any policy which covers automobile liability coverage. In fact, of the state courts that have considered the meaning of that phrase, automobile liability policy, and have made their decisions based on the plain meaning of that phrase, all but one have found that it unambiguously includes all policies that contain the coverage without exception. Only one court has disagreed and made that decision based primarily on an accompanying definition of motor vehicle liability policy that was more limited. Six other courts have found that the phrase automobile liability policy unambiguously applies to any policy containing that coverage. They recognize there's nothing in that phrase that would limit it to primary policies or exclude policies that cover additional types of liability. To the extent there is confusion about the meaning of the phrase as used in Colorado's statute, the best indicator of the legislative intent is the definition that was written in the very same piece of legislation in which the underinsured motorist statute was first passed. In that legislation, both phrases, automobile liability policy and motor vehicle liability policy, were defined as part of the Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility Act. Automobile liability policy was defined very broadly to include any policy that contained the coverage, while motor vehicle liability policy was defined more narrowly and required, among other things, that the policy designate particular vehicles. The use of both phrases in the same legislation within the UMA demonstrates that the legislature intended to broadly cover any policy insuring against automobile liability.
Is it your position that the umbrella policy is also subject to all of the other regulatory parts of this, Part 6, that deal with identification cards and so forth, that they have to do all that also?
Well, Your Honor, it would depend on the specific language of each section. 10.4609 is specific in that it refers to all automobile liability policies. I confess I haven't reviewed the remainder of the statutes. 10.4601 to 608 were part of the Cancellation Act, and the extent to which they would apply would depend on the specific language of those statutes.
But those phrases are used elsewhere in Part 6, are they not?
They are used elsewhere in Part 6. They're also used elsewhere in the Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility Act. I think the phrase automobile liability policy, as it was written in the UMA and as it's used throughout the statutes, is plain and unambiguously covers an umbrella policy. To the extent that it's confusing in the statute, another indicator that the court should look at is the policy behind the statute. And I think in that regard, it's also plain that the legislature has intended that every time an insured has the opportunity to purchase additional liability coverage, they also have the opportunity to purchase additional uninsured motorist coverage. And I think the attempt by defendants to characterize this statute as one that is only a minimum recovery statute is belied by the statute itself. It doesn't just require that a policy of liability insurance include an offer of the minimum amounts of financial liability coverage required by the Financial Responsibility Act. It requires a higher offer of uninsured motorist coverage, and it requires that the coverage include underinsured motorist coverage. And the purpose of that coverage is specifically to protect against an insured being limited to those minimum amounts in the Financial Responsibility Act. As the Supreme Court recognized in De Herrera, that requirement is an essential part of the policy of the Act, which is to allow insureds to maximize their coverage, to protect the expectations of insureds that they have coextensive liability and UM coverage, and to give insureds the option to protect themselves up to their own policy limits and not to be limited to some minimal level of coverage that is provided by the tortfeasor in compliance with the Financial Responsibility Act.
So, counsel, as I understand it, Section 10.4609, which is the statute relying on, subsection 2 states that in no event shall the insurer be required to offer limits higher than the insured's bodily injury limits, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And in this case, the insured, the policyholder here, did purchase uninsured motorists with $100,000, $300,000 limits?
In its primary policy, yes, the underlying policy.
But this says in no event. That's pretty absolute language.
Your Honor, except the statute provides on a policy-by-policy basis, not an insured-by-insured basis. So it requires an offer with every policy, and Allstate has never contended that it made an offer with the umbrella policy. So the policy, Colorado law, is that when an insurance company is required to make an offer of coverage and fails to do so, that coverage is reformed into the policy as a matter of law. The statute in 2002 required an offer of at least 100, in no event higher than 100,000 per person, 300,000 per accident. So if Allstate is found to have violated the law by failing to offer that coverage would be incorporated into the umbrella policy. And under Colorado law, I believe the case is State Farm versus Progressive, to determine whether a tortfeasor is underinsured, you look at the total available limits of any applicable UM coverage as compared to the tortfeasor's coverage. So Mr. Carlton would have 100, 300 in his primary policy and 100, 300 in his umbrella policy. Those would combine to determine whether the tortfeasor was underinsured in this case.
So it's your position that there is an event in which there must be coverage in excess of $100,000, $300,000?
No, Your Honor, our position is that the coverage that was required to be offered would be incorporated into the policy. So that would be the 100, 300 that was required to be offered. There's no underlying insurance requirement in the umbrella policy that applies to UM coverage. So that coverage would possibly be subject to the retained limit in the policy of $250, but otherwise would apply to any incident because it's the statutory coverage that would get reformed into the policy itself. Did that answer your question?
Well, if they sold $1 million worth of liability coverage, don't they have to offer $1 million of UM, UIM coverages under your argument?
Well, our the statute was amended in 2008 to require that the offer of UM coverage be coextensive with the liability coverage. And this was brought as a class action. So individuals who were injured or who purchased a policy after 2008 would be entitled to an amount equal to their bodily injury. The statute in 2002 required that the insurer offer, in accordance with its rating plan, limits equal to bodily injury, but in no event higher than $100,000, $300,000 per accident. The trial court construed that statute to mean that it never, even if the insurer has rated additional coverage, that only the 100, 300 limit had to be offered. And so, and that issue, it is a question of law and can always be addressed by this court, but has not been briefed on appeal that there would be a different remedy. So for those who were injured before the amendment to the statute under the trial court's ruling, they would be entitled to the 100, 300 that was required to be offered. For those who were injured after the statute was amended, they would be entitled to the limits of liability.
So was the amendment a clarification?
No, Your Honor, I believe the amendment was an expansion of the existing policy to allow Colorado insurers to maximize their protection, and was absolutely consistent with case law from this court and from the Colorado Supreme Court holding that the policy of the statute from the time it was first passed in 1965 until today is to allow insurers to protect themselves to the maximum amount possible. So I think that is not a change as much as an expansion on an existing policy. Now, the trial court found that the policy didn't fall within the realm of the statute because it was not issued with respect to any motor vehicle license in the state. This was incorrect. With respect to has been construed by courts to be a broad phrase that requires only that there be a connection or relationship with the coverage. In this case, the umbrella policy was written and rated to provide automobile liability coverage for vehicles in this state, and that is a connection or relationship within the meaning of the statute. If the legislature had intended to only apply the statute to policies that specifically designated vehicles, it could have done so. It could have simply relied on the definition of motor vehicle liability policy that was in the Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility Act, or it could have made an express requirement, as other states have done. But it didn't. The only requirement is that it have that the policy have some connection or relationship with vehicles in the state. And by virtue of the coverage provided and the premiums charged, this policy did. Finally, I'd like to address the argument that umbrella policies are somehow fundamentally different and require a special statutory application or interpretation. Umbrella policies, as defined in Black's Law Dictionary and shown by the policies at issue here, are more of the same type of coverage. There is nothing distinctive about the actual coverage provided. They insure against an unlikely but catastrophic risk, and they're a tool that an insured can use to structure their policy. But there is no reason they cannot function the same way with UM coverage that they function with liability coverage. And indeed, many insurers do offer UM coverage with their umbrella policies. There's no reason that an insured who wants to buy additional levels of liability coverage to third parties should not also be able to buy additional levels of UM coverage.
Well, but you're arguing that the company is compelled to offer it, not that nobody's saying they can't offer it, I don't think.
No, Your
Honor.
You're
saying the statute compels that they offer it.
Absolutely, and that is the exact intent of the statute, is that every time an insured purchases liability coverage, they have the opportunity to purchase uninsured motorist coverage. And there's nothing distinctive about an umbrella policy that would take it without or take it outside of the reach of the statute.
Would you not that umbrella policy is not only not mentioned in the Auto Reparations Act, it also is not mentioned anywhere else in the statute, and maybe once somewhere the word umbrella is used, but they're not regulated by the Division of Insurance either.
I can't speak to whether they're regulated anywhere by the Division of Insurance. They're not
a separate class of insurance. If you
not that I'm
if they're motor vehicle coverage, they're regulated. But
that's correct. Not that I'm aware of. But the phrase automobile liability policy was written so broadly that there's no need to specifically mention every type of policy that might contain that coverage. If I may, I'd like to quickly address the issue of the agent's obligation and then reserve the rest of my time. The issue on a motion to dismiss is simply whether it's possible that the agent who failed to inform herself adequately of what coverage Mr. Carlton was asking for and then failed to advise him of what was actually in the product that she said would protect his family can violate her basic duty as an agent. Would a reasonable insurance agent first find out what the insured was asking for when he actively sought out protection before undertaking to advise him that this particular product by Allstate would in fact provide that protection? Mr. Carlton is not someone who's alleging that she should have advised him he needed more coverage. He was someone who was actively seeking that coverage. And by failing to find out what he was asking for and advise him whether he could provide it.
He asked for an umbrella policy, did he not?
He did, but an umbrella policy is not limited to certain types of coverage. Some umbrella policies do provide UM coverage. Some umbrella policies don't. So the request for an umbrella policy cannot be reasonably understood to be a request only for liability to the exclusion of UM. It was her obligation as an agent.
Well, let me ask you, I guess, two questions. If Allstate doesn't offer an umbrella policy with UM, UIM coverage, and I see nothing in the record that indicates they do.
That's correct.
Then she sold them an umbrella policy.
She sold
Allstate sells.
She did, but his request was for additional coverage to protect himself and his family in the form of an umbrella policy. He didn't say, I want liability coverage. He said he wanted protection. And all it would have taken was a conversation to determine, well, do you mean protection that protects you directly from a severe and disabling injury? Or do you mean protection that protects your liability, your assets against liability to other parties? They're both forms of protection. They're both forms of protection that Mr. Carlton had previously purchased. And to impose on him a duty to understand which umbrella policies have which coverage, while leaving the agent blameless when she fails to find out what he was actually asking for, would be to subvert Colorado's law, which is protective of insurance expectations and protective of insurance who are unschooled in the language of insurance contracts.
Is there anything in the complaint that alleges that there are forms of umbrella policies that include uninsured motorist coverage?
I don't believe it's alleged in the complaint, but it is in case law. There are many cases addressing umbrella policies that do have UM coverage, so it's certainly something that is within the general knowledge. If I may reserve my time, I would like to.
You may have just under a minute.
56 seconds there. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Peter Valletta. I am here along with my co-counsel, John Vaught, representing the appellees, Allstate Insurance Company, and Sandra Perkins. The trial court should be affirmed. There is no statutory language.
Are you going to argue separately at all?
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Are you going to argue separately for the agent and for the carrier?
No, Your Honor, I'm presenting
you're
the
doing
whole argument.
Okay, fine.
There is no statutory language requiring UM in umbrella policies. Section 609 does not even mention umbrella policies. The specific limited UM requirements in Section 609 cannot be reasonably grafted into umbrella policies. Umbrella policies provide excess coverage for catastrophic liability you may have to others, for a wide range of personal activities and circumstances. Section 609's UM requirements provide a limited coverage, no more than $100,000, $300,000, that is not for liability to others, but it's a benefit to yourself. And it only applies to auto losses. There would be no UM coverage in the auto policy without the statutory requirement. Also, the trial court correctly held that the agent was not liable in negligence. The complaint specifically alleges that Mr. Carlton asked for an umbrella policy, and that's what she procured for him. as the 10th Circuit held in the Sewell case. In the context of an umbrella policy, there's no duty to explain to the insured that you do not have uninsured motorist coverage in the policy. The policy was clear that it didn't have it, and he could read it for himself. The express statutory language in Section 609 makes no mention of umbrella policies, makes no mention of personal excess liability policies at all. It only applies to automobile liability policies, motor vehicle liability policies.
But isn't that the circular argument? Automobile policies are supposed to have certain coverage, offer certain coverages. Collision coverage, comprehensive coverage, liability coverage, UIM coverage. You go through the list, okay? If you offer one of those coverages, are you not almost by definition, and that seems to be the plaintiff's argument, a motor vehicle liability policy?
No, Your Honor, you are not, because the statute does not say in a policy offering automobile liability coverage or any language saying whenever you offer the coverage. It says in an automobile liability policy, in a motor vehicle liability policy.
And you think that, or you argue that's a term of art?
I believe
that limits it to a certain class of what we all understand to be automobile policy.
I believe there is support, yes, for an argument that that is a limited term of art.
But it's
not
a defined term.
It is not a defined term per se. There are definitions you can refer to, and we've made arguments based on that. But my point goes beyond that. The statutory language itself doesn't say in a policy containing this coverage. It says in an auto liability policy. And I would submit that a policy that contains a coverage is not necessarily the same as a policy that is that policy, if you will. Umbrella policies, remember, go far beyond automobile liability issues. It goes into personal activities. It goes into use, not just of automobiles, by the way. It's not limited to automobiles. It talks about any land vehicle. It also talks about aircraft, watercraft. It deals with liability that arises from your activities in your home or your condominium or your apartment. When you're walking down the street, any liability you have to others, it's far beyond just an automobile liability policy. And therefore, the plain language of the statute is that this does not apply. It doesn't reach this full coverage in that sense, because the coverage is not enough to convert it into an automobile liability policy. The plain language of the statute should therefore be applied without further construction or interpretation. Additionally, Section 609 refers to automobile and motor vehicle liability policies and defines those terms with reference to policies in which insured vehicles are designated. In your auto policy, it'll say you have coverage for your Ford, you'll have coverage for your Chevrolet, you'll have coverage for your Jeep. The umbrella policy doesn't do that. The umbrella policy says we cover you for personal liability that may arise from any use of a land vehicle.
Well, it says it insures up to four automobiles.
It refers to the fact that you have four automobiles.
They have four automobiles.
Yes.
And that's what was listed on their Allstate motor vehicle insurance.
That's correct, Your
Honor.
Four
vehicles. It doesn't describe them, I agree, but it does.
Yes, it does.
There is a link, sort of, between the underlying policy and the umbrella policy.
Of course, and it's only natural that there would be a link, because certainly part of the liability which is being insured under the umbrella policy includes potential liability arising from operation of an automobile, but it goes far beyond that, and that's really what we have to remember, that it goes beyond simply just those automobiles. If, as I said, it provides for coverage for use of all land vehicles, and so again, this is distinct from the language of the statute.
There are underlying liabilities that are traditionally insured against by people with separate policies. Motor vehicle is one, aircraft, watercraft, we've already talked about, homeowners policies that have more general risks. And this policy has minimum requirements for underlying policies insuring those risks before they'll insure anything. Isn't that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So if the plaintiff here didn't buy any insurance on his car, he would have no liability coverage here.
That's correct, because the underlying insurance requirement is a prerequisite to coverage under this policy. That's correct.
Okay.
In short, I would submit that it makes no more sense to call an umbrella policy an automobile policy than it would be to call it a homeowner's policy or to call it a renter's policy, because it does cover something completely different, a myriad of personal activities and circumstances. Happens to include automobiles activities within that, but it's far broader than that.
But that in itself wouldn't prevent it from offering UIM coverage.
No.
Or making the statute applicable, would it?
I submit it would prevent the statute from being applicable because of the plain language of the statute. It does not say any policy which includes coverage for automobiles. It says automobile liability policies. This policy was not issued to cover automobile liability. It includes that, but includes far more, because it's there to insure you as a person on the broad range of the umbrella concept, if you will, that covers you for everything that goes on in your personal life. It's also not issued with respect to a motor vehicle, which affects the specific language, with respect to the motor vehicle, and with respect to a motor vehicle licensed in Colorado. Again, here's another distinction. The umbrella policy covers occupancy and use of land vehicles, not just autos, not just motor vehicles licensed in Colorado. So again, here's another point where you see that the umbrella policy coverage is different, broader than, and not the same as the specific reference contained in the statute, which mandates the imposition of UM coverage.
To the extent you know, I mean, you can take an automobile policy and run your limits up to 500,000, a million, and you can buy uninsured motorist coverages to match that in Colorado, as I understand the law.
Well,
is it profoundly cheaper to buy an umbrella policy above 300,000 than it is to take the automobile policy up?
Well, generally coverage for the catastrophic loss under an umbrella policy will be cheaper than liability coverage under a specific policy.
Okay.
That's my general understanding. But I want to go to the root of your question, though. Under Colorado law, there is no requirement to offer a person who has $500,000 on their auto policy, the UM offer only has to be up to 100, 300. It says, but in no event shall it exceed.
This is as of 2002.
Yes, under the statute that's at issue in this case. The 2008 statute is not at issue in this case.
Right.
And under that statute, it was specifically limited. You never had to offer anything more than the 100, 300,000, no matter how high your auto liability limits were. Again, another characteristic that shows the public policy, if you will, underlying the UM statute is not to maximize the amount of recovery under all circumstances. Yes, it is to provide an opportunity for insurers to make purchases of additional coverage, but not to guarantee that they will have absolute full recovery, as many of the other states' decisions have discussed this genre in, but rather to recognize we want to encourage the ability to purchase a limited form, if you will, up to the 100, 300,000. And so the public policy of the statute supports this notion of recognizing this does not reach the UM coverage. It's unlike the statutes in other states where the offer had to be, where the statute mandated the coverage at maximum BI limits before you turned it down. This says you have to offer it at this limited level, no more than 100, 300,000. Moreover, the characteristics of the UM requirements in Section 609 demonstrate that you can't reasonably graft those requirements onto an umbrella policy. The offer requirement says it shall in no event exceed the 100, 300,000. But that you can't reconcile that with the catastrophic limits that are, you purchase an umbrella policy for. If you're purchasing an umbrella policy for, $1 million, $2 million, how do you reconcile then the statute says, but you have to offer up to $100,000, $300,000. The two don't mesh. They don't make sense to try and put them together, which of course is why we contend the statute was not written for, was not intended to reach this type of policy. This policy is something different and does different things, albeit it includes a liability portion that would relate to autos. It goes far beyond that, but it doesn't relate to the characteristics that this statute specifically points to in its requirements.
There is a body of law in this area dealing with the distinction between full recovery and minimum recovery states. Minimum recovery states tend to agree with you. Full recovery jurisdictions tend to go the other way. What's not clear to me is what the rationale for that is. Do you have a ready rationale for why that split should be in existence?
As I read those cases, in those states where they called the scheme a full recovery scheme, we were dealing with a statutory requirement that said you shall include UM coverage at the highest limits, i.e. at your BI limits or at the highest limits available. And then you have the ability to reject. And courts said, well, that reflects a policy. We want to make sure you have as much as possible. The minimum recovery or limited recovery states, those statutes, like Colorado's, mandated only a minimal or a limited offer. You only had to offer up to the FR limits. You only had to offer, in Colorado's case, up to $100,300. That these courts interpreted as reflecting a public policy that says, the legislature didn't intend to guarantee you're going to have full recovery in all circumstances, but we want to make sure you have the chance to purchase more if you wanted it. And that you juxtapose those two recoveries in interpreting the statute if you apply the public policy. I would note among those cases, Your Honor, that the Delaware statute, which was construed in the O'Hanlon case in the Third Circuit, probably is the closest to the Colorado statute in that they had a requirement of an offer up to $300,000 of UM coverage. And that court concluded that that was more akin to the minimum recovery statutes and held that UM coverage was not required in an umbrella policy. So that's the closest analogy I see in those. Turning to the agent's case, Your Honors, the complaint specifically alleged he asked for an umbrella policy, and that's exactly what Ms. Perkins sold him. It was clear on the face of that policy that did not contain UM coverage. And under Colorado law, absent of a special relationship, which the plaintiffs have conceded did not exist here, the requirement on an agent was to provide what is requested. The request was for an umbrella policy, and that's exactly what was provided. Mr. Carlton obtained under his auto policy the $100,000-$300,000 that the UM statute required. He received the umbrella policy that he purchased. Also, it satisfied its obligations when it made those coverages available, and Ms. Perkins satisfied her obligations when she procured the coverages that were requested. So Section 609 was satisfied when the $100,000-$300,000 was provided under the auto policy, and when the umbrella policy was sold in accordance with the request. And there is no statutory language requiring the UM and umbrella policies. For years, insurers like Allstate have issued umbrella policies without UM coverage in reliance on that statutory language. Courts that have considered this in Colorado to date have concluded that in the Arapaho District Court and in the federal court, they concluded that Colorado statute did not require the offer. Expansion of this offer requirement by judicial decision is unwarranted, I would submit. It would be unfair to the insurers who have not had a chance to issue forms and premium rates to deal with the additional coverage. It would be unfair to policyholders who have been able to purchase this coverage, this catastrophic loss coverage at relatively cheap premiums, without a UM requirement that be imposed by the legislature, which would change all of the premium calculations and the options that an insured would have to deal with in making those decisions. I would submit, therefore, based on the material in our briefs and our argument, that the trial court should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. 56 seconds, you said.
Thank you. First, in response to Your Honor's question about the complaint, paragraph 133 of the third amended complaint does allege the coverage is available elsewhere. Second, with regard to policies providing additional types of coverage, that definition that defendants propose would unduly narrow the statute. The primary policy in this case provides a plethora of additional coverages: towing and labor coverage, lease and loan coverage, sound system coverage, tapes coverage. All policies provide more than one type of coverage, and the statute's reach should not be so narrowed as to apply to policies that only provide automobile liability coverage. In addition, the court in De Herrera, the Supreme Court held that uninsured motorist coverage ensures the person and not the vehicle. And I think that's very important to consider in looking at the issue of what type of connection is required between the vehicle and the policy. And finally, an additional 100, 300 of UM coverage makes a difference. Every amount of excess coverage makes a difference to someone who is severely and catastrophically injured by an uninsured motorist. Thank you.
Thank you. We thank both counsel for their briefs and arguments. They're of assistance in resolving the matter. The case will be deemed submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.